Welcome back to Dinner at Our Place. I'm Steve Pearson. As always, I'm joined by my lovely and talented and newly turned 30 wife, Jessie. Jessie, how was your birthday weekend?
It was so great, thanks to you and Cohen. And it fell over Easter weekend, which is like my second favorite holiday. So it was a pretty fabulous weekend.
So tell the fine folks what you did.
Well, we went to a concert on Friday night.
Which concert was that?
It was Andrew McMahon in the Wilderness, and it was fun. I think you had more fun than I did because I couldn't see very well. And for me, a concert is all about the visual experience, but
you know that like most people at most concerts can't actually see very well, right?
I know, but I feel like we have such great venues here in DC that I've been spoiled by. The great venues I've been able to see him really well, and then this venue wasn't so great. So, but anyway, it was a lot of fun to see him and see him
or
perform.
Not see him.
But the new songs are great, and that was a lot of fun. And then we Saturday spent time together as a family, which was super fun. And then yesterday we had friends over for like a real live episode of Dinner at Our Place, but we just didn't record it.
It's true.
But we had some of our good friends over for dinner and
Easter dinner,
and that was a lot of fun. And things that were discussed during that dinner will be on the pod at some point.
At some point.
It was a lot of fun.
So big ups to friends of the pod, Jess and Michael Barnes and Steffi and Blake Banky. Big birthday celebration. Big bash yesterday.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun. And other notable things over the weekend, besides the fact that Cohen is getting older and more adorable every day, is that Sam Hunt got married. Our favorite country artist.
Remember back to the very first episode of this podcast, we talked about Jesse's very conflicted feelings about Sam Hunt getting engaged to his on-again, off-again, long-time
lover.
And I remember back then you were very, very conflicted. How do you feel now that he's actually a married man and fully off the market?
Well, they got married on tax day, which, I guess
nothing more romantic.
I guess that's cool. But no, I hope they're happy, and I just want him to put out new music. Like, it's like, we're just waiting for new music. Come on.
So how did you get to the point where you're happy for him?
Well, we talked about that on the pod, I think. I was just excited for him to be able to hopefully have a loving relationship like I have.
Ah, well.
Remember? And then you said, am I your Sam Hunt? And I said, of course you are.
Well, so that makes me feel, even though I don't remember my own podcast, it makes me feel better the second time around. Just as good as it did the first time.
How was your weekend?
It was good. I was playing tag along for all the Jesse festivities, so it was great. I had a very very long week at work leading up to it, so it was a much needed respite from the work. I think it's actually the first weekend that I've left my computer at work.
Yeah, you were having like an anxiety attack all weekend. I could tell, but I'm really proud of you.
Yeah, I did not go back and get it. I couldn't take it. I went straight from work on Friday to the show, and they wouldn't let you take bags into the venue. So I had to leave it at work, and I never went back and got it. And I was I felt like a little itch.
All weekend,
on.
I could tell. You were really anxious to get to work this morning, I could tell.
There's a lot to do, but yeah. It was very nice to take a break and spend time with Jesse and Cohen, because I hadn't seen them very much for, a week and a half or so since we got back from our travels,
we've been on, sabbatical,
hiatus.
Hiatus, yeah. Spring break.
Spring break, yes, that's what we'll call it.
We were on spring break for a while from the podcast. We couldn't really take the microphone to Utah with us while we were traveling.
That's where we were.
So, we just took a little bit of a break, but we're back and better than ever.
So how was Utah? You were there for 2 weeks. I came the second week.
I had a ton of fun. It was good to see my family. It was good to see my nieces and nephews. It was a lot of fun. Love the Utah food scene. Everything is just so cheap there. I feel the need to buy and eat everything. I don't eat responsibly when I'm on vacation, especially not in Utah. So
what's your favorite thing that you ate in Utah?
Oh, goodness. Cubbies. I love a good Cubbies salad.
Cubbies. It's just a salad, though.
It's just, but it's so cheap and so good, and it's just so heartwarming. So Cubbies is a great stop. Where else do we eat? Apollo Burger is an always must. In-N-Out is a must. Hector's on 33rd is a must. Red Iguana we did this time. Normally we don't do that. Iceberg is.
I remember there's one that you ate at multiple times that you haven't mentioned. We went there three times.
Zao.
Yes.
Zhao is so good. We went paintballing with friends to celebrate Steve's 30th birthday.
Paintballing?
I mean, not paintballing, laser tagging.
Laser tagging. Never gone paintballing. I'm too much of a wuss for that.
We went laser tagging to celebrate Steve and our friend Ben, who was on the pod.
Friend of the pod. Big, long time friend of the pod.
We went laser tagging to celebrate their birthdays, which was hilarious and so fun.
That is quite the scene. Like,
yeah, tell us about this.
Everything you would expect. It was a laser. It wasn't just laser tagging. It was a laser tag lock-in. You showed up at 10 and you could play as much laser tag as you wanted until like 2 p.m. or 2 a.m. And so for 4 hours of laser tag and in the middle of the night, and the crew that shows up to play unlimited laser tag at 10 p.m. In Salt Lake City, Utah.
They were good.
Is about the type of crew that you would expect would be playing laser tag at 10 p.m.
One of them was wearing like one of those like dry wicking shirts.
Lot of nerds,
like,
man.
Under Armour, like, workout gear. They were ready. But then he was wearing like jeans with it.
Yeah, no, that guy was really good.
Yeah,
that guy
was really good.
That guy might as well have been a professional laser tagger.
Anyway, so we had a good time laser tagging, and it was a fun vacation. Actually, I think the best part about it for me was one night I was talking to my mom, and I've never told her this. I feel like I've told you, but you didn't remember either. But I have a big complex with my name.
You have a very normal name.
Jessica is my real name. I don't really respond to Jessica. I go by Jesse. I've never really identified with my name, I guess. I was born in 1987, and the most popular name in the United States that year was Jessica. And so there's 9 million people my age with my same name. So when I went to school, I went by Jesse just because there were so many Jessicas in my class, in my grade. And so my siblings called me Jesse growing up. And anyway, so now Jesse is my name, and I don't really like that I like don't have a real name. Like, I don't go by my real name of Jessica, and I don't really respond to it, but I also don't really like Jesse. And so I've always had this conflicted relationship with my name. And
I don't go by my full name either.
I know, but you like identify as a Steve, and like you're confidently a Steve. And I like
I just made that choice in like the sixth grade.
I know, but I don't really like the name Jesse. And so it's like I'm confidently going by a name that I don't really like. And then my maiden name is just hard to pronounce and hard to spell. So it was like a double whammy for a while. And then I got married and have like a normal last name. So that's nice. So I've never really identified with my name, and I was talking to my mom about this while I was there because my siblings all have like great but kind of unique names, and then there's my name, which is like just boring and the most popular name of the year I was born. So we had this conversation about it, and she, of course, didn't really know any of this and thought it was funny. And I mean, I'm 30 years old. I'm not going to change my name.
Did she think it was funny, or did she?
Well, she just didn't know I felt this way about my name, and I don't think most people do. I mean,
I didn't.
It's just like. It's just my own internal debate with my name. But anyway.
Should we choose a new name for you on the pod?
No, I'm
maybe like Sitting Bull or Runs with Wolves?
No. It was just like one of those conversations we had, and it was funny. And I mean, I'm obviously not going to change my name. And so it's like, I'm just going to own it. But anyway, that was a funny thing that came out of the Utah trip.
Well, Jesse, that provides an excellent segue because you're not, I don't know if you know this, but you're not the only person who doesn't like their name that they're given.
Really?
You know who doesn't like their name a lot of the time and
who?
Uses different names?
Who?
Celebrities.
Oh, and like musicians and stuff.
Yeah. We actually had this conversation when we were in Utah. I don't know if it was brought up by your own name complex.
I think I was talking to my sister and it came up, and then this is somehow segued into this.
But I always knew that there were a lot of celebrities who used stage names that are not the same as their real, normal, given name for one reason or another. But then I started looking it up, and I realized that it's a lot more prevalent than I thought, and it touches people that I would have never imagined were using a name that wasn't their real name. And so I thought this was fascinating, and I started looking at all these people whose names were their names I know them as are not their actual names, and I thought this would be an interesting podcast topic because I want Jesse, who knows more about celebrities than basically anybody I know. I wonder if you could guess, if I gave you people's real names, like their birth given names. Birth certificate names. If you could guess
who they are, who you know them as. Well, I wonder why, if people do it out of convenience or if they do it because they don't like it, et cetera, et cetera. Because there's probably a lot of different reasons.
I think there's a lot of reasons. I think one of the big motivators is if there's another celebrity with a similar name.
Yeah.
That's one. I know a lot of folks with Jewish sounding names have changed their names to avoid anti-Semitism in the industry. If there's hard pronunciations or spellings, people will change their name.
I would for sure change my name. Let's play this game.
All right. All right. Here
we
go.
Get closer though so they can hear you.
don't worry about me. I talk plenty loud. So I'll start easy. All right.
Throw this me some softballs.
If you don't get these, a couple of these first ones, I'm going to be real worried.
Okay, and anyone listening, play along. And if you are better or worse than me at this game, let me know. I hope I don't totally botch it.
All right. So the first one, Katie Hudson.
I already know this one, and it's Katy Perry. And I only know this because of the documentary that I absolutely love about her. I think it's one of the best.
What documentary is that?
It's Part of Me or Piece of Me?
What's Part it called? Of Me.
Part of Me. It's a documentary that follows her and her life. And she talks about this in the beginning, what her real name is. And I don't know why she goes by Katy Perry, but I think it's fabulous.
Yeah, the reason why she goes by Katy Perry is because there is another very famous celebrity with a very similar name.
Kate Hudson. I was like, Kate Hudson. Babe. She's a babe.
She's a babe.
She's a twin.
We found that out.
She's a twin. The guy on Nashville.
Jeff Fordham
on Nashville is her twin brother.
I did not know that until you told me that.
And he's beautiful and he's good looking and she's a babe and Goldie Hawn has two adorable children. All right, next.
All right. I'll give you another easy one. Elizabeth Stamatina Fay.
Tina Fey.
Very easy. But yeah. Stamatina, what kind of a name is that?
I'm not good at these kinds of things. I wonder what the
origin of that is. It's a very interesting name. But that one's really easy.
She has a big nose, so I don't know.
I'll give you one more really easy.
This is like the warm-up. Okay.
Cornelius Crane Chase.
This is easy. Where's this is easy? I'm gonna be
one
dying.
Of those words is that is in the name that you know this
Chase,
person.
Chevy Chase.
Yes. Okay. So that was a little harder.
Oh, geez. That's like the Monday issue in like the newspaper. How like Monday the things are like the Sudoku
You're talking
puzzles
about the Sudoku
are easy,
that your mom
and then my
does
mom
the
did. Yeah. So now we're on to the Tuesday. Well, a little bit harder.
All right. Here we go. This one. There's a lot of words in here, but one of the words is a tell. Edda Kathleen Van Heemstra Hepburn Roostan.
Katharine Hepburn.
Audrey Hepburn, close.
Audrey Hepburn.
You had a 50-50 shot. The two Hepburns.
Audrey Hepburn, interesting. What's it say again?
Edda Kathleen Van Heemstra Hepburn Roostan. So you can see why she changed the name.
I totally get, but like, where did Audrey come from that? That's interesting.
Probably just a pretty name that she liked. I don't know.
That's something. That's a good one.
All right. Natalie Herschlag.
Natalie Portman.
I knew that one because
I don't know why I knew that one, but I knew that one.
If your name was Natalie Herschlag, would you change your name?
I would, yeah.
Herschlag, that is a Jewish name. She's from Israel. Like, that's a very Jewish name, and not like a Cohen or like a really
Some
common
Stein
American Jew.
Yeah. Stein.
Yeah, not like a common American Jewish name. That's like a deeply Israeli name. Portman is actually her grandmother's maiden name, interestingly enough.
Look at
so,
you.
And a lot of times they'll use like family names or something like that. Okay, here's one. And I know for a fact
Pause. So like people like that, is her legal name now Natalie Portman?
That's a good question.
Like
I don't
when know. She goes to the bank, on her bank accounts, does it say Natalie Portman?
I don't know. I imagine it's probably like
I don't know.
A mix.
I don't know. That's so weird. Like, be like split identity, you know?
So, for example, I know that Jon Stewart, that's not his real.
Wait, is that on your game?
It's
or
not
you?
On my okay. list, but I can't remember what his real
name is. Funny man, Jon Stewart.
John, I think his last name is Leibovitz.
Leibovitz, something like that.
But yeah, it's Jon Stewart Leibovitz is his real name. His middle name is Stewart. And then he changed his name, less Jewish. It went by Jon Stewart, just his first and middle name, and his like legal name is now John Stewart. He's like changed his name.
I feel like that's what you'd have to do to like not be confused.
It'd be pretty confusing otherwise. Yeah. Okay. This person I know that you love and have very strong, long-held personal feelings about.
Okay.
Margaret Mary Emily Ann Hira. Four first names or a first name and three middle names.
I want to guess because I know this person doesn't go by their real name, but I don't know if you gave it away by telling me I'm Emma Stone.
Nope.
Because I know Emma Stone. That's not
you
a real name.
You do love Emma Stone though.
I don't know who that is. Who's that?
Margaret Mary Emily Ann Hira is Meg Ryan.
Get out.
Yeah.
You think, and you've got mail, she signed her name like that?
I don't know. But that's what...
Joe Fox would not have been into that.
I don't know if you know this, dear listeners, but Jesse has...
I'm a big fan of...
Jesse loves You've Got Mail more than I think anybody in the history of the world loves that movie.
Yeah, I love that movie. I love that. I could quote the whole... I love that movie.
What's your favorite part of You've Got Mail?
At the beginning. Well, like, it's like the second scene in when the, like, fall happy music comes on and she talks about, like, walking down the street in the fall. Oh, gosh, I haven't seen it in so long. I'm blinking. But something about, like, New York in the fall and she's, like, walking to work and talks about, like, the, I don't know, back to school and all that kind of stuff. But I also love all the scenes with her crazy boyfriend.
Ah, that guy.
What's his name? We need to watch that. I'm blanking right now. We need to watch it this week. That's on my to-do list.
His name Peter? I don't know.
Her funny boyfriend.
Yeah, I liked him too. He's a splash.
And then
of humor.
Parker, what's her name?
Parker Posey.
Parker Posey's in that movie, yeah. Dating Tom Hanks. I love it all.
I thought she worked at the bookstore.
Parker Posey?
Yeah.
I thought Parker Posey was
apparently
Tom,
you haven't watched
Tom
it.
Hanks's girlfriend that he hates. That's really annoying.
I'm not sure. We'll have to look it up.
Maybe no, we'll Lenny get... from You've Got Mail works at the bookstore.
Yeah, there's the girl that works in the bookstore too.
Yeah, she's like flighty. I think Parker Posey could be wrong, but I think that's Tom Hanks' girlfriend.
We'll look it up and we'll update
anyway,
next
Meg
part.
Ryan, crazy name.
All right, next one. This is another person that you really love.
Okay.
Peter Jean Hernandez.
Peter Gallagher?
No.
I don't know. Who?
Bruno Mars.
Get out. Wait, what?
Peter Jean Hernandez.
Oh, man. Bruno Mars is just a cool name for a cool dude
that's
that
like
wears
cool
hats.
That's like the ultimate stage name. Like, if you're going to pick a stage
just go
name,
all out.
You just got to go all out and pick the...
I want to know why you picked Bruno Mars. I'm going to find something and read about it.
It's probably like...
That's not a family name.
What they say, like, what your stripper name is like the, is like your dog's name, like, for your first name, and then, like, your last name...
It's like a random planet
like
in the universe.
The street that you grew up on as a kid or something like that. I've heard that as like your stripper name or like your news anchor name. Like sometimes you have like Rock Galloway or something like that. Yeah. Like none of those are real people's names.
Bruno Mars. Interesting. I feel like kind of betrayed by these people in this
you
moment.
You feel like you were like they weren't
like they've been lying
with you.
To me. They don't. They
we know
even
how
to,
you do with lying.
They haven't even told me their real name.
Not well.
Not well, Donald Trump. Not well.
Not well, Donald.
All right, what's next?
We're going to go to an older gentleman.
Okay.
Maurice Micklewhite.
You are killing me with these, Steve.
This gentleman, I'll give you a hint. This gentleman was in the more recent Batman films.
Christian Bale?
I said older, not... Christian Bale's what, like 40?
He's older. Oh, you mean the man is older?
Much older.
Oh, I don't. It's that old man. I don't know his name.
From Jolly Old England?
Yeah.
Michael Caine?
Michael Caine, that's his name.
Or Maurice Micklewhite, if you're going to refer to him
I
by his given
like
name.
I kind of like Micklewhite as a last name.
I just thought that was funny. I know you're not like a big Michael Caine fan. I just thought that was a funny name. Maurice Micklewhite. Very British. Incredibly proper.
And I like the alliteration.
Here's one. Karen, actually spelled like my mom's name. My mom spells her name C-A-R-Y-N, which is a very uncommon spelling. I haven't really seen very many people that spell it like that, but this person does. Karen Johnson.
I know this person. And you're going to say it, and I'm going to kick myself because I know who it is, and I cannot think of it right now. I'm really blanking tonight.
Comedian, African-American woman. Dreadlocks.
Whoopi Goldberg.
Whoopi Goldberg.
You should have just said Hollywood Squares.
I don't know. How do you get the name Whoopi Goldberg?
Going like, all out, Bruno Mars style.
Whoopi?
Maybe it was a nickname when she was little.
It might have been a nickname. I'm going to look that up. That's very interesting. All right. Couple more.
We should have looked these up in advance, and then we could have actually taught our listeners something.
Well, you know, this isn't an educational endeavor. If they were coming here for education, they really... Our listeners...
They're going to the wrong place.
They're going to the wrong place. They're not as smart as I thought they were. Okay. Here's a couple. Ramon Antonio Gerard Estevez.
Emilio Estevez.
No.
Brother, Martin Sheen.
Martin Sheen is his dad.
Dad, Martin Sheen.
Dad, Martin Sheen. Yes,
that's Martin Sheen's real name.
That's Martin
his
Sheen's real
name. His son is Emilio Estevez. His brother is Charlie Sheen.
His other son is Charlie Sheen.
Yeah, Emilio's brother is Charlie.
Yeah.
Emilio's the best one, D3.
So Emilio is the only one...
Mighty Ducks.
...of the famous Estevezes. He's the only one that did not take his dad's stage name.
So I actually didn't know that Charlie and Emilio were brothers for a really long time because they have different names, but they look a lot alike, and so I just
Almost identical.
Yeah, so I just always got them confused. I did not even connect the dots. They were probably related.
They probably don't look... They don't look identical now. Emilio looks like a little bit of a weirdo. I don't know if you've seen him recently. There's some weird facial hair going on. But then again, if we're talking about weirdos, no one's weirder than Charlie Sheen.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Do you remember when he was like a thing?
Tiger's Blood?
The Tiger's Blood.
And like everyone wanted to be his intern?
Hashtag winning. I applied to be his intern, I think, at some point.
I think it was during Ben F. Season of The Bachelor. And Courtney would always use winning, like as like in her little interviews
with
the camera.
That was a weird point. That was a weird moment in our popular culture.
That was like 2000, and I can tell you it was right before we moved to D.C., 2010?
Yeah, it was at the end of our college years.
Yeah.
And everyone was saying hashtag winning all the time, and I was into it. Like, it was a very, looking back, it was really dumb, but it was just a strange moment
just
in our
a little,
popular culture.
Like, one of those, like, moments that is always going to be, like, time-stamped.
Yes. Okay. Two more. One we will talk about a little bit later.
Oh, wow.
Eileen Regina Edwards. This person is from Canada, so they might pronounce that middle name Regina. Regina.
Any ties to the name, real name?
Nope.
Totally random.
Totally different.
So I'm not gonna get it.
I don't know.
From Canada.
From Canada.
Any clues?
Singer.
Not
woman.
Regina Spektor.
Not Regina Spektor. She's from Russia.
Singer, woman.
Country.
Shania Twain.
There you go. Yes. That woman has an amazing life story. But yes, her real name, Eileen Regina Edwards. And then I think when we were talking about this with your sister, I did say, I said Eileen Regina Edwards. Because there's a place called Regina in British
and what
Columbia.
Did Abby say?
And she laughed at me because it sounds like another word. But
well, Shania Twain is like such a country name. It's like, there's no way that. Like Faith Hill, that is her real name.
No, it's not actually.
So no,
it's her last name is different, but her real name is Faith.
No, she married Faith Hill's first husband's last name was Hill.
Oh, that's right. Her first husband's last
so
name.
So Faith
Hill,
Hill yes. Faith Hill's real name is Faith Hill. She just never took Tim McGraw's name.
That's right. You're right.
So, but like Faith Hill sounds like a country musician. Even like Miranda Lambert sounds like a real country musician because you can tell it's a real name. But like Shania Twain, that's like too good to be true. Again, Bruno Mars. You know, all those.
All right, last one. And this is a famous one.
John Legend, like out there on that light.
John Legend, also not his real name. Real name, John Stevens. Who gave John Legend his stage name?
Kanye West. Kind of think they should have named their little girl who just turned one. They named her Luna. Mm-hmm. Did they name her Luna Legend?
If she ever becomes a singer,
I'm sure they
should have. Her name.
I think they gave her the last name Stevens, though. But yes. They should have given her Luna Legend.
All right, last one.
Character out of Harry Potter.
Yes, Luna Lovegood.
But it would have been Luna Legend. All right.
Last one. This is a you should get this one. This is a maybe the most famous stage name.
I'm ready.
Norma Jean Mortensen.
I think I know who this is, but I don't want to be wrong.
Jesse, this is a safe space.
I think I know who this is. Most famous stage name. I know who this is.
Who it is?
Marilyn Monroe.
There you go. When we did this the last time, you didn't know, and I was surprised.
I knew that Marilyn Monroe had a fake name, but I didn't know that was it.
So there you go. Now you know, because the first time we did it, you didn't know, and then I was like, Candle in the Wind, Goodbye, Norman Jean, and I don't think you knew that song was about Marilyn Monroe.
No, I did not.
Before it was about Princess Diana?
You have to remember... Candle in the Wind is by Elton John, right?
That's correct.
Elton John, I'm going to say something right now, really embarrassing.
Oh my goodness.
And never mind, I'm not going to.
Please,
stop.
Please,
because
say
I kind of thought Elton John was briefly tied to the Beatles for a second, and I hate the Beatles. But I have no excuse because my dad is a big Elton John fan.
Your dad is a huge.
My dad
Elton
is a
John
huge
fan.
Elton John fan, so he would probably disown me if I just said something wrong about Elton John.
So you thought that Elton John was in the Beatles?
No, just like maybe loosely tied to
Elton
them.
John Lennon, like the same
loosely
person?
Tied to the Beatles, just for a quick second. That's all.
They were alive at the same time for a while. Yes.
I know, that was confusing. Both from like the same continent.
They are both from England. Yes, that's true.
You know, wear weird sunglasses.
Also, yes. See, there are parallels.
See, I'm connecting
here.
The dots.
We're starting to unwind
yes,
how this happened.
Yes, yes.
All right. So
fun game.
That was fun. Yeah. We learned some things, right?
Totally.
So now, you know, the next time you guys are watching a movie and Meg Ryan comes on. To, you know, send some emails to Tom Hanks.
She's making a comeback.
Is there like a You've Got Mail sequel where they send Snapchats to each other?
No. That's a good idea.
You've Got Snaps?
You've Got Snaps? She's making a comeback in like the acting world, I think. That's what I read somewhere.
All right, well, Margaret, Mary, Emily, and Hira, best of luck on your comeback. While we wait for that, Jesse and I are going to take a break. And we'll be back in a second, but you are going to listen to some cheerful piano music. See you in a second. Welcome back, Jesse. Have something I want to talk about.
What?
I have a big idea.
What is it?
So.
And I know what it is, and I have a big smile on my face right now.
So, a week ago or so, last week, I was reading a great article in The Ringer about a band that I had kind of forgotten about, uh-huh. But there was this whole article about how this month, April, is the 20th anniversary of Third Eye Blind's debut album, the self-titled debut album. And if you were alive and cognizant in 1987, you know what this album is and what it looks like. It's got the red cover. And
the album does not matter. Two songs on the album matter.
Whoa.
Hot takes.
Well, so there's this great, you know, kind of alternate history of Third Eye Blind and what's happened since then. And looking back 20 years on that album, and that like really inspired me to go back and listen to this album for the first time in a long, long time. And you know what? It's still really great.
Was it just as good as it was when you were 10 years old?
That album is stocked with bangers, man.
It's got two bangers.
But no, there's so many.
It's got two bangers,
guys. The first six songs on that album are great. Yes, you have Semi-Charmed Life.
Semi-Charmed Kind of Life is the only one that matters.
It's a great song. It was the big hit off the album.
It's that one, right?
Yeah, it's that one. Yeah, the do-do-do-do-do-do-do song. Jumper, great one. A little bit more touching.
That was reaching the emotional side of the 10-year-old Steve that was listening to this.
How It's Going to Be, that's like
How Is It Going to Be is a good one.
Also underrated, Graduate. I know you're not a fan. No, it's a little harder to drive, but it's really good. And so I started thinking, as I was listening to it, I was like, man, this is great. This is 20 years later. This really holds up. And I came to the conclusion, you know, they say that, you know, this isn't a new idea, but, you know, they say that culture and fashion and a lot of things, they run in kind of 20-year cycles. Something that's popular 20 years ago will come back into vogue 20 years later, maybe slightly different. But right now we're kind of going through like the 90s, you know.
Grunge.
Yeah, there's a little grunge coming back in. Like a lot of styles that were cool in the 90s are kind of back.
The culottes.
Right. And so I think my idea based on this, and I've always ascribed to that theory because you can just see it happening. My idea is that really we shouldn't evaluate or attempt to really evaluate the value of art or culture until we've had like that 2-decade waiting period.
You're being such a purist right now.
Well, I think we pass judgments all day, every day about what's cool, what's not cool, what is, is this, so last does this year, have value or is it not valuable? Yeah. Is it gonna, but we don't really know what's gonna inspire like a generation of artists or really gonna have staying power until you separate and like give yourself a little distance from, you know, when that thing first happened. And so what I wanted to do today,
I totally agree with you on that. I think you're being I think sometimes when you're like, let's just wait 20 years, it's like that's kind of not realistic. It's a fun idea.
I think you can have like opinions, hot takes and like quick reactions like, oh, I like this or I don't like this, but you can't really assess what something is going to mean in the culture and if it's going to have a shelf life until, you know, you see if it does or not.
Okay.
But what I want to do is 20 years ago is 1997.
I was in the fifth grade.
We were in the fifth grade.
I was loving sunflowers.
Loving sunflowers.
I probably had a big sweatshirt that had Gap written on it, and I was probably wearing simple clogs. Or maybe those were like the fourth grade. I don't remember.
You were a big clogger?
Yeah. Keds.
So, but there was a lot. There was a lot of music that came out in 1997.
A lot of good music.
Oh, well, that's, we'll see. We're going to have to revisit some of this. But I want to take a trip back down memory lane. And I think that 1997 is so meaningful to me, not just because it was 20 years ago, because 1997 was the year that I actually discovered what music was and bought like my first CDs.
Wow.
And one of
that's big.
Yeah, it was a big year for me. And one of them was the first one I want to talk about, which is the CD Middle of Nowhere, the debut CD, the debut album of a little band we in the know like to call Hanson.
That was one of your first CDs?
It was my first CD.
Was it Mbop album? See, you're like an album person. You're like a good, respectable person that likes albums. I like songs.
Well, the big
give
song.
Me the hits. Mbop.
Mbop was the big hit off that
You know
that
who's
one.
A big Mbop fan?
Who?
Lindsay Neely.
Friend of the pod.
Lindsay Johnson.
Friend of the pod, Lindsay Johnson. Huge Hanson fan.
I said Neely because you knew her when, like, she was a big, anyway. Yeah, Mbop fan. Every time I think of Hanson, I think of her.
So, Jesse, thinking back to Mbop.
Mbop. Sunflowers. Beautiful Boys.
Why do
because
you associate
with sunflowers?
Because
their music video had them, like, playing the instruments and, like, there was, like, sunflowers in the background.
How did you...
I don't know how...
How did you watch the music video?
So
you didn't have cable.
I didn't grow up in a house with cable. No, I don't know.
There was
no
YouTube.
I don't know how we got music videos at my house sometimes on some channel, but we did, and me and my brother would watch them. And I just remember there was, like, a good chunk of time in my life where I'd wear my hair, like, slicked back, half up, with a sunflower, big sunflower on the back of my head. And it was probably because of Mbop.
Hanson, it inspired you that much.
Hanson inspired me. I love that song. And they had, like, great hair, like, Jonathan Taylor Thomas-esque hair.
Theirs was even longer than JTT,
And it was, like, they were awesome. And the flannel. And, like, I think one wore overalls with, like, one of the straps undone. Right? Am I wrong?
It's probably true.
I think I'm right.
I think you're definitely
How
right.
How do you feel about it?
My 20-year take is that that's still... this is a legitimately great
holds
song.
Up.
It holds up. The song holds up. It's a legitimately great song.
Like, you don't really ever know what they're saying. They're like, just kind of...
They're so, you totally know what they're saying.
No, you don't know what they're saying.
Plant a seed, plant a flower, plant a rose. You plant every one of those.
I feel like what I'm going to do is I'm going to take all the songs
we talk
about.
Find out which one
grows. We're going to take about all...
It's a secret no one knows?
We're going to take all the songs we talk about and I'm going to put them into a playlist because I don't want to get caught singing these songs on this podcast because I'm a terrible singer. Steve will do like good dramatic reads of the lyrics, but I am going to make a playlist of all these songs because they are hits, big hits. I think they're big hits.
I think that Mbop
holds up.
Holds up. It's a great song. It's still a great pop song. Like a top 25er for me. Maybe.
I want one of Cohen's first words to be Mbop.
Mbop.
And we're going to work on that.
Dap-a-doo-wop. Okay. Another one. This is actually the first album I bought. Hanson was the first album I owned. I was actually given it by a girl in my class who didn't want it. She got in like one of those CD clubs.
Oh yeah, my brothers did those.
And I was really obsessed with Mbop, and so she gave me the album.
I'm jealous.
Her name was Elena, I think.
I'm jealous.
I don't remember her last name. Anyway, it was fifth grade. The first album I bought.
No, you didn't.
Also in 1997. And remember, this is the era where if you liked a specific song, you had to buy the entire album. Chumbawamba, which sang the wonderful hit, Tub Thumping.
The I Get Knocked Down song?
Yes. Should we play a clip of it?
Yes.
Just to remind you, in case you forgot.
In case you forgot.
This is Tub Thumping, the seminal and only hit by Chumbawamba. So that's it. That's Chumbawamba.
Is this like your audition tape to be on like Ryan Seacrest's radio station?
Yes.
Because you're doing a really good job like
and
setting the songs up.
And this is American Idol.
You're setting up the songs real good. Where was Ryan Seacrest in 97? That's a good question.
He was probably, I mean, you remember what he looked like at the beginning of American Idol? He looked like a weirdo. So.
Yeah. So Chumbawamba holds up or doesn't hold up, Steve? It's always going to have a special place in my heart.
It'll have a special place in my heart because I remember the first time I got really into it was from my babysitter, Andy Hokanson, who was really into this for some reason. It was a popular song at the time. But I'm going to say it doesn't hold up.
Doesn't hold up. I'll go with you on that.
It's very much of that moment. And I don't think it really had any legs in terms of like, there's no like artists out there who are like, you know, I really got into music because I was inspired by Chumbawamba.
Who was that guy that had a big hit like 2 years ago and he performed on the Rockin' New Year's Eve?
I don't know.
The Asian dude.
Psy?
He's like the Psy of 97.
the Gangnam Style?
The Gangnam, yeah, that's the Gangnam Style of 97.
Oh, Chumbawamba. What a band. But the other 1997 thing that was really meaningful to me, and then I know there's some that are very meaningful to you, which we'll get to in a second, but the other one, the big album was from 1997 for me. The biggest album that had the most legs for me was Backstreet Boys' self-titled album, actually released in Europe in 1996, came to America in 1997, and that album, my friend, is just stocked wall to wall with jams.
Hit after hit, hit after hit.
They just keep coming. Quit Playing Games With My Heart, As Long As You Love Me, but really, the number one jam, and this is a top five all-time jam for me.
I think it's the best song that came out in 1997. I can't believe we're leading with one of the biggest songs that came out in 97.
But I think it is a top five, like, pop jam, favorite pop jams of all time. For me, it is top five.
What
Everybody,
is it?
Backstreet's Back.
Sing us some, or should we listen to it a minute?
We should listen to it. So that's it.
Okay, so
is your face melting? Because
no,
mine is
face,
melting.
My
I'm
face
sweating
melt.
In interesting places on my body. Just
so is that why Backstreet Boys are
everybody,
in Vegas?
Everybody.
Is that why Backstreet Boys are in Vegas? Is this like a 20-year?
I don't know.
Is it just coincidental?
I think they're just grabbing the cash.
But it just coincidentally happens to be the 20-year.
Yeah, but they at the American Academy of Country Music Awards were a couple weeks ago, and they performed that song.
And it melted everyone's face off there.
With
they're all
Florida
country
Georgia
fans.
Line,
yeah.
And it was like it lit the place on fire.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Like Tim McGraw was like wetting his pants.
Yeah,
in the
Tim
front
McGraw
row,
was wetting his
which
pants,
which I did not expect. Didn't seem like a Backstreet Boys fan.
I think everybody loves this song.
It's a great song.
Like anybody breathing alive. Everybody loves
that
everybody.
Song. Comes on, even in just the snippet we just played you, you know that you started to get like a
you
little
like
funky in
to.
Your seat. You started like getting a little,
you know how,
doing the butt dance in your seat.
You know how Cohen doesn't dance yet?
He does
maybe
not dance
our
at
child
all.
Does
I don't think he
dance.
Has any rhythm whatsoever.
Maybe we need to play him this song.
Maybe he just hasn't had
he
enough
hasn't
Backstreet's
had right.
Back in his life.
Yeah, I think I'm going to play him this song tomorrow. Maybe that'll get him dancing.
So Jesse, those were all the things that I was into in 1997. I had a very limited musical palette, but Backstreet Boys, at least, started a lifelong love of boy bands.
Very interesting few songs there.
Well, maybe Hanson started the love of boy bands and Backstreet Boys cemented it. I'm not sure. What were you into in 97?
1997.
You had a very, when we started, we're talking about this before the pod, you had a very emotional response.
I had no idea that I had so many ties to 1997. Like, I had no idea that all these exciting songs came out in the same year. So I remember having a lot of sleepovers with my girlfriends at my parents' house, and there were two CDs that we would listen to like on repeat one after another. The first one was Wannabe by the Spice Girls, because what girl didn't think they were like the sixth member of the Spice Girls?
You were a Spice Girl for Halloween at some point.
Yeah, that was much later in life. But like at that young age, like every girl wanted to be another member of the Spice
that
Girls.
That picture still exists. I think that you should put it
but
on
that
the,
was like in high school, like a
blog,
joke. No. But
that
like,
picture is great. Everyone like, deserves to see
that
it.
That was like in high school, but like in the fifth grade, like you, Spice World came out in the VHS, like you wanted to be a Spice Girl. And so
I've never gotten the
appeal. I was always the ginger because I have red hair. But anyway, Wannabe by Spice Girls. That is a hit. That is like you just cannot not sing along.
Tell me what you want, what you really, really want. I tell you what I want. It's a little obnoxious though, isn't it?
No, it's super obnoxious, but it's just like one of those songs that's like so in the moment.
I think it's very of its time.
Very of its time.
And it's really
so I don't think
to
it holds
a whole
up.
Generation of young women.
Yeah, and I don't think it holds up in like your 20-year test thing. But I think it's like in the moment, it was like a big hit. And you just got to appreciate it for what it was. The other CD that we would play on repeat was like we'd rotate between Spice Girls and then we'd rotate between Casey and JoJo. But
you would listen to the whole CD?
No, we'd really just listen to All My Life.
I don't actually know more than like two Casey
There's
and JoJo
There's a few good
songs
on there, but All My Life by Casey and JoJo is just an emotional...
We should play this one.
Yes.
Because this is like everyone has danced to this at a church dance at some point.
Yeah, or a school dance.
Or a school dance.
Yeah.
Do you feel like romantically connected now?
I like feel like my 10-year-old, 12-year-old self is like
you're feeling puberty inside
feeling
of
puberty
you.
Puberty is coming back. Yeah, seriously. So those two songs were big for me. I think another big
Were you
one,
like thinking of like little 12-year-old and 13-year-old boys while you were listening to the Casey and JoJo song? Were you like,
oh, of course.
All my life.
Of course. Of course.
I love your peach fuzz.
Oh, you should probably wear deodorant. Anybody else? No, I loved it. And then the other song, I didn't realize how big of a connection I had to Savage Garden.
Savage Garden.
Savage Garden has like a big piece of my heart. I didn't even know this.
Weren't at least like, one of those guys
all
gay?
Savage.
Are one of those guys
well,
gay?
Just
both
like,
of them?
There's like... There's
How would your mom have felt? Did she know that you were listening to gay artists?
So all of Savage Garden has a special place in my heart. Like starting in 1997 with like the I Want You song. It's the Chicka Cherry Cola song. Everybody knows it. Like everyone wanted to know all the words. It was like super cool to know all the words. Nobody knew all the words. It's kind of like that Lion King song. You don't really know what they're saying. So
that's a bang, la, la, that's as close as I got.
Yeah, so that's the Lion King song. So the Chicka Cherry Cola song on Savage Garden. Listen to it on the playlist that I'm gonna make tomorrow with all these songs. And then like Savage Garden, most people kind of got over Savage Garden, and then like Affirmation came out, and then like people really were over Savage Garden. I never stopped listening to Savage Garden through my high school, college days. In fact, when I was at BYU and I would go take a test in the testing center. I can't believe I'm saying this. I'd go take a test in the testing center and you'd walk out of the testing center and you'd get your, at BYU, you would take all your tests in this one big room and then you would walk out and then there was like a computer screen that would show the end of your student number and then your score. And so you could get your score right away if there wasn't anything that needed to be degraded by a professor. But anyway, so I'd get my multiple choice scores like right away. So I'd walk out, I'd look at the screen, and I usually always bombed those tests because I'm terrible at taking tests. And so I probably had like a terrible score, and I was really sad because I studied a lot. And then I would turn on Savage Garden, Crash and Burn, and I would listen to it as I walked
Which
home,
one is that?
Or walked. Let's play a clip.
All right, we'll play a clip. Savage Garden, Crash and Burn. Jess, just think, when you listen to this song.
Just think of me failing a test at BYU.
When you feel all alone and the world has your wild, wild heart. And know you feel like the walls are closing in on you. It's hard to find relief, and people can be so cold when darkness is upon your door.
Oh, is that one?
And it's like, it's so depressed. I'd be so depressed and so sad. And then I'd listen to that song and it was like, all was good in the world again. And it was like, crash and burn. Like, I wasn't alone. Everybody else was crashing and burning. And that just made me feel better. So I still have, like, when I listen to that song now, I still, like, in an instant, you know how music can take you back to a place?
Mm-hmm.
In that moment, it takes me back to being a student at BYU.
Having failed a test.
And then the Savage Garden before that, like the 1997 Savage Garden, like takes me back to my older brother, McKay, would always get their piano music and like try to learn their songs to like impress the girls he liked. And so it just takes me back to like my brother trying to learn the songs on the piano. So Savage Garden, there's a lot of history with me.
At least now I know that if you're ever having a really hard time, I can just find some beautiful gay men to serenade you and everything will feel
everything
better.
Will be good in the world. But it's true. But so those are probably my like four top 97 hits. They're all good ones.
Those are good ones.
Oh no, I didn't go over my last one.
Oh no.
Which I just realized tonight is like amazing. And I did not know it was also in 1997. Seriously, the best year of music.
What is it?
Remember the song called Bittersweet Symphony?
By The Verve?
Yes.
You were a big Verve fan.
I love that song. I don't even know why.
Why? Yeah, I was going to say, why do you like it so much?
I just love that song. Like, who doesn't love that song?
Dun, 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 dun.
It's like so simple. Like,
yeah, see, I've never really gotten it. Like, I've never gotten the appeal of that song.
I feel like it must have been on like maybe one of my like end of year soccer team videos or something at some point. Like, you know how they would do like the end of the year highlight videos? Maybe it was like in one of those at one point.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. Love that song.
Did you feel like you had a lot of bittersweet feelings going on in your 10-year-old body?
I don't even think I was. I don't even know what it was, but I love it.
Did your older siblings like it? Maybe that was a
thing? My older siblings were really. I mean, my older siblings were like cool teenagers during the 90s.
Yeah.
So maybe that they were really into Dave Matthews and like Mighty Mighty Boston's. Mm. And so maybe that's why.
They were into ska?
Yeah, Abby was into ska.
Oh, that's a dark
you
period.
Can take that up with her next
I'll
time
I'll take
you
that
see
up
her
with her the next time I see her.
So maybe it was like because it was my cool older siblings liked it, so I thought I needed to.
No one was cool who liked ska, FYI.
But it was the 90s.
I'm probably offending a lot of Mormons out there right now. Probably many of my friends like ska.
It was the late 90s.
I'm going to get lots of texts.
It was the late 90s. Anything was okay.
That's true. There was no rules in the late
90s. There was no rules in the late 90s.
But there were other great options that you could have been listening to other than ska.
Like?
Like Ben Folds 5.
I cannot believe that's 20 years old.
Whatever and Ever Amen. The
one with the four pictures of him on the front.
Yes, the best Ben Folds 5 album. They're all very good. Love.
He looks like he's like 35. That means
now
he wouldn't put
or
this
then?
Out. Like even
he's
now,
like
he doesn't.
25 then.
Now he even looks really young.
He's in his 40s.
I know, but he looks so good for his age. I forget. I don't think he ages.
But you know the big song off that album.
Of course I do. Brick that I literally thought was a love song.
Yeah, Brick is very.
I was
but you were
sure
not the
it was
only
a love
one.
Song.
You're not the only one.
Really,
I think that's a very like widespread thing that because it got super popular and I think
because I didn't listen to it until later, past 97.
Oh well, it was really popular at the time. And I think the reason why
like
it was really popular. Yeah, it was really popular. It was a really popular song, and a reason why I think a lot of people liked it is because they thought it was like this touching love song from this guy to his girlfriend or whatever.
Fast forward, The Luckiest came out like 15 years later. That was the love song they were waiting for.
Yeah, that song's also really creepy.
It's very creepy.
There's a whole verse about how, like, if you were a little girl and I was an old man and you rode by my house on your bike, would I know that I'm in love with you?
But it's really weird. Creepy. Poop does Ben Foley. Maybe he just does everything creepy.
Maybe. But this song is, Brick isn't creepy. It's just really, really intense. It's a song.
It's deep.
There's a lot of difficult and complex emotion in that song. The song, if you just listen to the chorus, which we should probably just play.
Yeah.
She's a brick and I'm drowning slowly off the coast and I'm heading nowhere. She's a brick and I'm drowning slowly.
Okay, if you just listen to that, you see that maybe that's like a conflicted, like, relationship type thing. But in reality, if you listen to the whole song, you listen to the verses, it's a song about him taking his girlfriend to get an abortion, which, whatever
97, that's bold. It's bold
in
now.
97, but that's super bold. And whatever your feelings are on the issue of choice, like, that is not an easy decision to make. It's not an easy decision for the woman to make. So you imagine all the feelings that she has. You imagine the feelings he has as a potential father who's probably not, doesn't feel like he's ready to be a father. But all of that kind of somehow got lost and was like, oh, it's just such a nice song, or like it's a breakup song or whatever. It's not that. It is a super serious song, but it's a really good song and it's a really great album, which I think totally holds up.
Oh, held up. I agree. That one held up.
Is there any that didn't hold up for you from 1997?
There's a song.
I think
I'm lighter. I'm easier. I'm an easier judge on these things. You're a harsher critic.
Like Fly by Sugar Ray, also from 1997.
Totes held up.
No way. That song
Totes held up.
That song is.
Anything by Sugar Ray is a hit.
Is that your favorite Sugar Ray song? Or is there one that you like more than that?
I don't remember. Is that my favorite Sugar Ray song? I think it might be.
Every morning there's a halo hanging from.
That's Fly, right?
No, that's Every Morning. That came out several years later. I also bought that CD, 1459. Not that great.
I think every Sugar Ray song is a hit in my book.
Yeah? Yep. I didn't know you were such a big Sugar Ray fan.
I am like.
You have very indiscriminate taste here, dear.
I do not discriminate. You know one song that did hold up and will hold up for the rest of forever, as long as kids are graduating from high school, it will hold up. You know what song that is? The Green Day song? The Green Day graduation song. Everybody who graduates high school.
I think that technically the name is Good Riddance.
But it's the
parentheses, Time of Your Life.
Parentheses, graduation song. It's that graduation song.
Everybody, as soon as you say graduation song, knew what it was.
You know what song I'm talking about. Do you want to play a little bit?
Yes.
Another turning point, a fork stuck in the road. Time grabs you by the wrist, directs you where to go. So make the best of this test and don't ask why. It's not a question but a lesson learned in time. It's something unpredictable, but in the end is right. I hope you had the time of your life.
Okay, so the graduation song.
As you were listening to that, you were transported back to like your senior
gown,
class rally or something like that.
Everyone who's ever graduated from middle school, high school, you have heard that song. And so I think that song will stand the test of time because it will be around forever. Those lucky kids of 1997 were the first ones that got it.
They were
my
the
brother,
originals, and everyone's been aping their act.
Yeah,
ever
they're
since.
The ones that got the real graduation song, except for we're very out of the loop. Maybe there's a new graduation song we don't know about.
Maybe there is.
I'm going to have to talk to the youth.
I mean, it's been 12, almost 12 years.
Maybe there's
since
a new
I
one.
Graduated from high school. I remember trying to make a push for some type of other graduation song.
Of course you
but
are.
But ultimately, we ended up with Good Riddance
How
by Green
can
Day.
You not?
Although the year before me, they did not. They had, some song by the Ataris. I can't remember which one it was.
I'm going to have to talk to the kids in our neighborhood and see if they still graduate to this song.
That's probably...
That will be a good test of if it stood the test of time.
Yeah, the class song. This is the ultimate
class song.
Like,
Cohen's going to be graduating high school, and they're going
to
be using this song
There still. Needs to be, like, now this is 20 years old, there needs to be some type
Didn't,
of,
like... Did, Vitamin C do something with
oh,
this
yeah,
song?
Oh, yeah, Graduation. No, that was a separate song. Graduation by Vitamin C. That was also popular for a hot minute, but then I think everyone went
back to the
Green Day.
So Green Day stood
Green
the
Day
test
stood
of time.
The test of time. Yeah.
There as needs long to be, as kids are graduating, it's going to stand
there
the test
There needs to be some type of oral history or, like, big, long feature on the like, incredible and unlikely like legs that this song has is like a graduation song. It's pretty incredible.
What other songs do you think stood the test of time or didn't?
Well, I think that I would say that the biggest, like one of the biggest, if not the biggest album in terms of like commercial success in 1997 mm-hmm. was Come On Over by Shania Twain. It had so many hits. It had at least like 4 or 5 number one hits, and not just on the country chart, it crossed over into the pop realm too. And I went back and listened to it actually a couple weeks ago, and I was thinking about this
97.
I was like, oh man, because I remember my mom loved that album. And
oh,
she,
everyone loved that album.
We played it constantly in our house and in the car, and that was in the area, that was like the time of our lives when like there was a lot of time spent in the car, like driving to soccer practice and basketball practice and piano lessons.
I think everyone loved that album.
Yeah, there's a lot of hits, but I listened to it and I was like, this feels very 97, right?
So like it doesn't translate.
I don't feel like it translates to today. Like if I were to listen, when I listen to that, I'm like, I'm not like, this is like just great music and it's still great today. I feel like nostalgic because it occupies a specific time and space in my life.
But it ends there. Interesting. I'd agree. I agree with that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I will say, is there anything else that you wanted to bring up? Another 1997 music?
I did not know that Space Jam came out in 1997.
It's a great film. Like, one that I recently bought on Blu-ray specifically for the purpose of introducing my young son to it. He haven't done it yet, but it's going to be a great moment.
With Space Jam comes the only song that matters.
I believe I can fly.
That song, R. Kelly, stands the test of time.
It's a really great song.
It's a really good song.
R. Kelly, incredibly problematic human being on multiple levels.
Is he alive?
He's alive. He's a bad person, though.
Okay.
He's not great. Not a good human being.
But
man,
a good
could
song.
The guy could sing, man. And that's only my second favorite R. Kelly song.
Wait, what's your favorite? Ignition?
Ignition. You top five jams?
Top five jams. Ignition, right behind
Ignition,
everybody.
Ignition remix, to be clear.
Oh, it's got
to
be the remix.
Yeah, I don't actually know that many people who actually know the original Ignition.
No.
Oh, only everyone knows the remix.
I Believe I Can Fly. I did not know that was 97. I mean, I should have known that was 97, but I didn't. I was so excited when I heard that was 97.
Why? Is there like a deeper meaning for you?
I mean, it's
you?
Just like such a, like a good,
Does it inspire
so many
you?
Good memories with like that song. And like, well, I remember seeing.
You weren't a Space Jam fan though.
Every kid was a Space Jam fan.
Really? You don't like Jesse?
I don't like cartoons.
Jesse doesn't like cartoons.
But I feel like the like Bugs Bunny, I feel like that's different.
And it did have some live action. We had a little Michael Jordan, had a little Bill Murray,
had
a little
I feel
Wayne
like
Knight.
Space Jam is just like one of those films that every kid likes.
It's a great one. I speaking of 97, that one, the film holds up.
Where was the first time you saw
and
Space
Jam? We're going to have a second Space Jam with starring LeBron James here pretty quickly.
Wait, did you see Space Jam? I feel like you would have emotional connections to Space Jam.
I actually don't think I watched Space Jam until a little bit later. I don't remember going to see it in theaters, and I do remember like a lot of movies I went and saw in theaters as a young child for some reason. I don't remember watching it until a little bit later in my life, but it's like a really meaningful movie to me for some reason. And I liked Michael Jordan, as long as he's my favorite player or something, but I don't know, I love basketball, and so I think it's a great way to cross basketball with like cartoons and things that kids like. I think it's a fun story, and Bill Murray's funny, and Jordan is not as bad an actor as I would have expected.
Okay, we're gonna watch You've Got Mail
and Space Jam.
Space Jam this week.
That's what's coming out of this pod.
That's
the next steps.
That's your homework as well. Everybody needs to watch
Listen to all these songs. Watch You've Got Mail.
We got a lot. We're asking a lot from you.
And the one you really need to make sure you listen to, because I would love to hear some thoughts on that people have on this, because I know what Jesse's thoughts are. Probably the most critically acclaimed album to have been made
in 1997.
The album that, if you were to ask music critics, they would say is the best album.
Critics also like the Beatles.
The fact that you don't like the Beatles is weird. Everyone likes
the
Beatles.
I like the Beatles. I just don't think they're that great. Like, they're fine, but, like, they're not.
You mean the fine and, like, greatest, you know, rock band of all time sense. Potentially.
This is, like, your music critic, Steve Pierce, talking.
They had a lot of... Okay. You want to talk about jams, Jesse? Those guys had more jams than anyone else.
Not true. You know who's had more jams?
Who?
I'm sure there's someone. I'm just not thinking about them right now.
Fair enough.
More jams. Who's had more hits?
No one has had more hits than the Beatles. Nobody.
Katy Perry.
No one has more number one hits than the Beatles.
No one. No one ever.
Nobody ever.
No one's come close.
Other people have come close. Michael Jackson has quite a few.
Michael Jackson.
Taylor Swift does have quite a few. Now, well, maybe not number ones. Katy Perry has a pretty decent run going, although her last album kind of. Katie Hudson, sorry.
Tell us, though, about what the critics would say the best thing about 97. We'll go into the Beatles another time.
Radiohead.
Gross.
Okay, Computer. Probably their crowning achievement.
Gross.
Why do you hate Radiohead?
Radiohead puts me in a bad mood.
Why does Radiohead put you in a bad mood?
It's terrible.
Why is it terrible? Why don't you like it? What don't you like about it?
It just makes me grumpy. Radiohead is not good.
So, like, Radiohead puts you in a bad mood in the way, like, the Mormon Tabernacle Choir puts me in a bad mood.
Yeah. Radiohead just makes me grumpy and makes me angry. And it's not like, it just makes me not feel good.
Jesse's getting very agitated.
I hate Radiohead.
Even just talking about it, Jesse's getting, like, physically agitated.
She's I don't like Radiohead. I don't like Radiohead. In case you didn't know, I don't like Radiohead.
Well, if you do like Radiohead.
Why do you like Radiohead?
It's great music. It was invented at the time. That album was incredibly innovative.
Album?
No, this was not their first album. This is their third album.
Are they like 70 now?
Pablo Honey in like 1993.
How old are they? Are they humans?
They're in their 40s or early 50s now, still putting out music. I haven't been as big a fan of the most recent stuff, but...
None of their music is...
Their run in the mid to late 90s, early 2000s is great. Okay, Computer... which is the one that came out in 1997, is an incredible album. Most people consider it their best album, although it's not my favorite.
It's gross.
Jesse thinks it's gross, and that's all that matters. But anyway, that's probably enough about 1997. This pod has probably gone on longer than it should have gone.
1997 was a good year.
The fact that this pod is probably going to stretch more than an hour shows you how great 1997 was.
So we're going to put together a playlist... Listen to it while you're driving in your car and you can jam out to all the hits. We will leave the Radiohead off. You can jam out to all the songs. 1997 had some good music. I am proud to have been 10 years old in 1997. Good music.
Good music. Well, thank you for tuning in. Those of you who are still with us after an hour, you are saints. Thank you for tuning in. We promise we'll get back on the schneid now and do more regular podcasts. We're back in the saddle. So thank you for joining. Thank you for listening. Thank you for reliving 1997 with us. And thank you for joining us for dinner at our place.